to BFF.m.
This is Ásthildur from Pascal Pinon, and you're listening to Best Friends.
Listening to TV on the radio here on BFF.FM. I'm Jessica and I'm here with Leah. Good morning, Leah.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm great.
What a week.
Yeah. Yeah.
I had a really decent breakfast taco this morning.
So nice.
I'd say
something.
That 2018 is shaping up to be a pretty good year.
I mean, hope springs eternal, right? Like, we're going to see A Star Is Born today. So yeah. That's going to be transformative, I'm sure.
I've read some sparkling reviews for that, and I'm having real trouble picturing it being a good film, but I've been going with an open mind.
Well, there's different ways for things to be good, Jess.
That's true. Yeah, how are you doing?
Oh, great.
Okay, good. Yeah. So today we are talking about Amazon's Forever. I hate that.
Well, women are still allowed to talk on the radio.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is our last show, you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what did you think?
I had, it's, as you mentioned, an Amazon original show.
I also hate that I keep having to invoke Amazon. What? I don't know why.
Yeah.
It's like, because they're insinuating evil. Themselves into every corner of my life.
Yeah.
It's a place I get my content from and my toothpaste.
Yeah. Same. Place I get my snail mucus and the place I get my TV.
Don't want to know.
I'm here to turn everyone on to snail mucus as skincare. It's great. Don't I look radiant, Jess?
You do. Yeah. You always look beautiful and you do look radiant today.
Uh-huh. It's the snail mucus.
It's snail mucus.
But some things aren't speaking worth it. Of snail mucus, it stars Fred Armisen, who is a fucking monster. Can we all just agree that Fred Armisen is the worst person that's not currently on the Supreme Court?
I don't hate Fred Armisen the way you do, but I do find him a little off-putting. The idea, like, I can just tell if I were at a party, like, stuck having a conversation with that guy, it would be the worst.
Yes.
Like, you can just tell he's one of these people who's sort of like,
intense eye contact and nodding the whole time you're talking while he's trying to think of what he's going to say to shine. Like, Fred Armisen has absolutely drank his own Kool-Aid. Like, he thinks he's doing big and important work. And
I don't know. I just imagine him, like, not making any effort to make anyone feel comfortable. Because that's sort of his brand, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway.
It starts him and the utterly delightful Maya Rudolph, who I love.
I thought she was just wonderful in this show.
She was really amazing. Also looks radiant.
Yes.
She looked amazing throughout the show. And I was like, the bangs.
The bangs are so cute.
I was like, should I try bangs? And I was like, Maya Rudolph, you evil fucking temptress. Like, you're making me think I can pull off bangs. I cannot pull off bangs. I find her, like, thoroughly delightful.
She is. And she brought some depth to this role, I thought.
Like, yeah.
I don't think of her as a dramatic actress, but she was really, she made me feel things.
Yeah, just her face makes me laugh normally, and I didn't have that reaction in this show. And you asked, what did I think? And the show is very hard to categorize. We're not going to be able to get through the whole show, our show, without spoilers. But it's hard to categorize, and it was very hard for me to put together my thoughts on
I felt the same
what
way.
I actually thought of the show. But the thing, my biggest takeaway is I genuinely, like, in this era of reboots and fucking, like, franchise, like, superhero things, like, superhero adjacent movies, like, all of it, it's just nice to see something that's original,
yeah,
that's different than anything else, and that's like, nothing blows up in this show. There's very at least not physically, emotionally perhaps, but yeah, it's not, I appreciate something different. Alan Yang created this show.
Co-creator of Master of None.
Yeah, and Parks and Recreation and other stuff.
The other guy, Matt Hubbard. He's the one from Parks and Rec, I think.
Alan Yang has successfully, like, we thought Master of None season 2 was just outstanding and did some really interesting things and played around with kind of, like, the TV format in interesting and new ways. And I like that his voice is out there now.
Yeah, and I thought this did a really good job. It tackles really big topics, so we'll just spoil everything. They're a married couple who are in kind of a rut, and at the end of the first episode, Fred Armisen dies.
Skis into a tree, which was right so gratifying.
I actually thought, like, oh shit, he's not going to be in the rest of the series.
No,
incorrect.
I knew he would fucking wheedle his way back in.
So they find themselves in the afterlife, which we'll talk more about how that's fleshed out, and dealing with their, like, marital woes.
Well, in the second episode, she dies.
Yes.
Yeah.
So they're reunited in death. And it's like, I feel like these big, ambitious ideas and, like, the big questions the show poses, it could have been easy to, like, fuck it up and make it really stupid or pretentious. But I don't know. I thought the show did a really good job. It also didn't really concern itself too much with, like, the rules of its universe.
Yeah, or answers to any of the questions. Like, my big takeaway was, like, I'm not sure what it was trying to say. I think it, like, posed a lot of these sort of interesting existential questions.
Yeah.
And then didn't necessarily try to answer them, which is in itself interesting. Like, yeah. I think that a lot of shows posit themselves as, like, being the answer for, you know.
Yeah. I like that about it.
Yeah. It's a very slow show. It's also hard to categorize in that it's not explicitly funny, but there are moments that are very funny.
I laughed a lot during this show. The writing, the writing was pretty funny, and Maya Rudolph definitely brought her like specific brand of like tone to it. That made no sense, but you guys know what I mean.
Yeah.
She was very funny. I really laughed at some of the jokes. When he's like, so he's this kind of boring guy. He's content with his boring life.
Yeah.
He's perfectly fine with it. And she wants something more out of life. And that's kind of where the problem in their marriage arises. But he's always doing crossword puzzles, just sitting at the table.
Yeah.
When he said, I think the theme of this one is misspelled state.
Yeah.
I laughed so hard. That is an A-plus joke.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of stuff like that, I thought.
There was a lot of stuff like that. Also, the character Mark, the little teen neighbor, was great. And
so everyone in the afterlife stays the same age they were when they died. Mm-hmm. And Mark is a, like, punk, skate punk, who died in the 70s.
In his Camaro.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that provides a lot of comic fodder.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, he's great. That actor is great, and I would like to see him in more stuff. And
yeah, Noah Robbins is who that is. Yeah, I looked at his filmography. He's been in some stuff.
Okay.
I look forward to what he does next.
Yes. But what did you? We talked about how it kind of defies classification and also posits these kind of big questions and doesn't necessarily provide any of the answers. What did you feel was, like, the overarching theme of the show, or what were some of the things you took away from it?
I don't know. I mean, it's in this category, I think, of, like, uncynical TV that we're seeing more of in our garbage times. I thought about Master of None, obviously. The OA and The Good Place, I think, is a obvious comparison. You know, it kind of, well, I don't know. I'm having real trouble.
Yeah, I didn't think of it as uncynical. Like, I sort of viewed it as, like, well, this is hopeless. Like, when you die, there's nothing left to look forward to.
So,
like,
one thing that you're
thrust into this, like, slight variation on your previous life, but
that really made me feel things. Like, when she woke up in the afterlife, she had sort of just gotten her life back on track after the death of her husband. It's like a year has passed.
Yeah.
And she wakes up after having died
choked on a macadamia nut. In first class.
To find that they can just live in this sterile suburb with, like, they don't have to do anything, and she can just go back to her life with her husband. I felt, like, the crushing weight of eternity at that idea.
Yeah.
The idea of, like, but you would think that, you know, the afterlife is just a pleasant place where you don't have to work or grocery shop, and, like, they live in a beautiful mid-century home with very nice furniture in it. You know, you could posit that as being fine, and that's the thing, he was fine with that.
Yeah,
he didn't have any questions that he didn't have any desire to explore. She said, like, she asked at some point, like, what's the point of all this, and he said, well, what was the point of the thing before this?
Yeah,
And I thought that was kind of a good way to put, like, life in perspective.
Yeah.
Is, like, if the good part about life is that death is coming.
Yeah.
You have, a creative limitation on what you do with your time.
Yeah.
And the idea that you would have no limitation, just have an eternity of a...
Shuffleboard.
Shuffleboard was a good metaphor for shuffling through life, yeah. Right? Just shuffling along. I don't know. So I, even though I am having a terrible time articulating how I feel about it, I really liked that moment.
Yeah, I think that kind of one of the central things for me too, you touched on it briefly, like one of the things I loathe the most, well, there's many things I loathe about Fred Armisen, but one of the things that I hated the most about this specific character is his complete lack of curiosity about anything. Mm-hmm. Like, he doesn't even ask her how she died. Like, that's just polite. Like, he's just like, I'm so glad you're here. Yeah. And I thought that was kind of like this interesting metaphor for marriage and like men. Like, he says that he's explaining to Mark that when he met her, she had had all these like really good looking boyfriends, but they were all terrible. And I was the first person who was nice. Mm-hmm. And he's like, that's enough, basically. Right. And I was like, is that the saddest thing in the world, or is that just fucking male privilege right there? That you're like, well, I'm nice, and that's all I have to do for the rest of my life. Like, I was the first guy who was nice. Or is it also just, like, extremely sad that he has always known that she's sort of too good for him and just, like, passively, aggressively doesn't ever want to rock the boat. Like,
right.
Doesn't want to be curious about why they're together, about what she wants, about, like, how they could change their life. He's just like, nope. This works for me.
Right.
And
he thinks that what he thinks is good enough should be good
yeah,
enough.
Yeah, like, this works for me, and I'm just going with that. And I was like, I don't know if that's just, like, I don't know. Is that like, the death of a marriage? Like, the death of curiosity, that you don't seek any new experiences? You're just like, here I am. Like, okay, like, we've found this rut, and now let's furnish it, you know? And I thought, like, I went back and forth between being like, this guy is super, super pathetic, and then just being like, he is also just a fucking ass. Like, why hold yourself and your partner back? Like, because it's just enough, you know? Like, shouldn't there be more? And that, like...
But that's the thing about committing yourself to another person for presumably your entire life,
is
right?
You just choose to do it, and that's it?
I just think that two people are inevitably... you know, you're going to be pulled in one direction or the other.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know. Yeah, I know. I think this show, it asks some questions about just the very idea of marriage and didn't necessarily answer them. But I thought the way it dealt with these issues was very emotionally honest.
Yeah.
And I could imagine that that's kind of a big risk in a fantastical situation, and with two actors who are known more for, like, goofy impressions.
Comedic,
you know, mm-hmm. not such serious stuff.
Yeah. And also, I thought that the show ends, again, we're gonna do spoilers, but the show ends with them having a huge blowout and getting divorced in the afterlife, which is just them saying, like, I solemnly swear to divorce you for all these reasons. And then through this convoluted thing, they end up sort of reconnecting and deciding that they, like, just choosing to be together again.
Right.
And I was like, why would you leave your awesome female friendship in a castle,
like, I know.
To go be with Fred fucking Armisen?
Yeah, well, let's just talk about the ending. So, at the beginning, there's this beautiful montage that opens the series.
Mm-hmm.
It's this sideways pan of their courtship, their meeting, and it's like 4 minutes long, and it's really beautiful. And so, I did like the ending where they decide to just walk into the ocean together.
Yeah.
That was, like, instead of sideways, that was them moving forward together.
Yes.
But, and I also found it very moving, I think, just the imagery of two people walking into the ocean, which looks like a suicide pact.
Sure.
I felt very moved, even though another part of me was like, but why would she get back together with
him? Like, why?
She was, hanging out with Catherine Keener and, like, wearing fucking awesome caftans.
Amazing caftans. Also, she had, like, this teal dress that with these fucking blue shoes. And I was like, I will take that entire look, Maya Rudolph. I need the lookbook for that, Ellen Yang, if you can let me know where we sourced all the clothes. That'd be great.
Surely there are some tumblers dedicated to the fashion forever. So what are we to take away? So she wakes up in this suburb, Riverside, which I guess is where they lived when they were alive. And eventually she meets this new neighbor, Catherine Keener, who plays a character named Case. And they go to another place, which is Oceanside. Mm-hmm. And I did love the idea of Oceanside and Riverside being sort of opposites or whatever. But what are we to take away from the difference between the two? Like, Riverside is a sterile suburb. It's very quiet. Nothing seems to happen. It's perfectly fine for Oscar, Fred Armisen's character. Oceanside is like this big beachfront castle where everyone's having fancy parties all the time. And then they mention that they begin to forget their lives from before. And there's this like ceremonial cleansing where they burn everything. And like, it's to, I don't know, remind themselves.
Let go of attachments or whatever. Yeah.
And I don't know, I guess June, Maya Rudolph's character isn't quite satisfied with either one, but I don't know. The show really makes you think.
Yeah.
But my brain is broken.
Yeah, but I don't know what to think about anything that it's asking me to think about. Think. Yeah. I think Julia Ormond does a great
cameo.
She looks amazing, but she does this like cameo as this like pompous French lady who's at Oceanside, and she's like, some of the things you say are so stupid but so funny. That is such a gift. Like, and it's just like her whole thing about like,
that was a very funny
character. She was implying like, that's my gift telling you that you're so stupid. Like, or whatever. It was just, and at first I think it's you're kind of enamored of like the newness of Oceanside, and you're like, oh, like they're drinking and there's like these big parties and you get to do karaoke and like in a very classy way.
Yeah. With a band.
Yeah, but then it's sort of like the sheen falls off that also. Like, that's not any better than like being in your beautiful mid-century home and having dinner cooked for you by your extremely boring husband. Except that obviously it is better, but it's like they both set off looking for something new. I was just like, why would she choose to do that with him though? Just like walk into the ocean yourself, like just try to find something new with like, they reference how she was having an emotional affair with Catherine Keener, and like Catherine Keener and Maya Rudolph had like a million times more sparks than Fred Armisen and Maya Rudolph.
I guess they share
And there's
humor.
Well, there's a very like comfort based thing. Like, you've built a life with someone and like that's what you know, and then like maybe let's try and go build a new life together or whatever. There was the interesting thing that they did too to sort of highlight their relationship was they would have these like back and forth sort of debates or questions about
what's
like
the best way to say
what's the best way to say it, what's the perfect beach food, things like that. And those moments were like genuinely charming, and obviously Maya Rudolph and Fred Armisen have a long history together, both performatively and personally. I mean, as friends, she's
go ahead, start a rumor.
Never gonna be fucking dumb enough to. Ugh. Anyway, Fred Armisen and his stupid rubbery lips. You can see like the comfort and the obvious like camaraderie, and those are the moments where you're like, oh, like yeah, sure, that'd be okay. But there's always something vaguely like discomforting under the surface.
Okay, I have another question for you.
Okay.
What, so they also set forth in the afterlife that there's this fountain in Riverside, yes, and you can't get too far away from it or you start to feel very tired. Mm-hmm. It's like their source of energy or whatever. And then they sort of explain that you can take energy away from living people.
Mm-hmm. Currents.
And so that's how Maya Rudolph makes the journey from Riverside to Oceanside. And then they just sort of dispense with that idea. And I was wondering if that was just sort of a dropped thread, or I misunderstood it, or if it was the idea that that's actually a self-imposed limitation and, you know, that's what keeps us from doing anything adventurous in life is these self-imposed limitations,
yeah,
or obligations to other people or obligations to whatever, or imagined obligations, having a job.
Yeah. Yeah.
I and think then you that... can like, you are free to dispense with that stuff, but it's, you know.
Yeah. Catherine Keener and Maya Rudolph have an interesting conversation about that very concept where, mm-hmm, like Catherine Keener is like, this guy is like fucking mowing his lawn every day. Like, why?
Right.
Like, that's absolutely like a self-imposed thing. And yeah, it did sort of seem like that was the deal with the fountain too. Like, there's no real rules here, but yet people set up this thing where like you can't go too far from the fountain.
Yeah,
you know, and it's
people
like,
need these rules to, yeah, that wasn't order in their lives.
Yeah, that wasn't mandated from, there were no answers in the afterlife. Like, there was no, right, welcome video like in The Good Place, you know. There,
yeah,
were no answers or rules, and I do think it was kind of like a self-constructed limiting thing. And Maya Rudolph and Fred Armisen have a conversation, Oscar and June, let's just call them, sure, Oscar and June, have a conversation at the end about the limitations that they've put on both themselves and each other through their marriage.
Yeah.
And she's like, you know, I used to blame you for holding me back, like if I wasn't with you I would be a different type of person, and now I've realized like I'm not that type of person, like,
right.
There's a really, really touching episode, Andre and Stephanie,
oh, yeah, I forget,
or something,
yeah, there's a bottle episode,
yeah, there's a bottle episode with two real estate agents, mm-hmm, in Riverside, the real neighborhood that's adjacent to what they believe is this like abandoned neighborhood because it's
mold,
asbestos, or,
yeah,
mold or whatever. But there's this through line with these real estate agents who meet and have this like intense connection and talk about how they're meant to be together, and they start this affair, they're both in other, mm-hmm, relationships, and it follows them throughout their lives. And I thought it was really sweet and touching, and just, yeah, again, touched on that theme of like the fear you have of
holding
different
back,
things that hold you back. And like, well, I can't leave now because like it's my daughter's birthday in 3 weeks, and then my parents are coming to visit in 4 weeks, so I can't leave then, and,
mm-hmm,
I can't. And just, yeah, like the way you hold yourself back, and then at the end it ends with one of them dying and the guy is just like,
and they never
missed our
got
chance
together, yeah.
They never, yeah, they never, I mean, they got together for a while, but
right,
never,
they didn't leave their spouses.
They didn't leave their spouses and have a life together. And again, it was sort of like their lives were still okay. You know, it's like, do you dare to do something different that's going to be maybe great? Or do you, like,
right,
that it didn't posit that this guy's life was miserable and fell apart because,
well,
he didn't follow his heart.
Well, they did suggest that their people they were with weren't, you know, their ideal partners. It suggested their connection was stronger than,
yeah,
you know, they had both sort of settled in their,
yeah,
their lives.
Yeah.
She even said, like, you know, she was getting to the age where she wanted to have kids, and so she kind of picked a partner who,
yeah,
you know.
Which, yeah, is what everyone does.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You fucking marry the person you're dating when you're 28.
That's, yeah. Pretty much. Yeah.
Not speaking from experience, yeah, but yeah. Man, this show is philosophically very heavy.
Yeah, yeah, it's got a lot of stuff. And there's also a real crushing melancholy to this show.
Yeah.
That,
there's a lot of jazz music and a lot of no music.
Yeah, and there's
like
also
very silent.
There, I thought, you know, Mark was mainly this comedic character, but there's a whole,
oh, that was really sweet,
scene where there's this lady in he's like, oh, I kind of like one of the girls over there, and there are like two young girls and then this old lady. Yeah. And he and Fred Armisen's like, oh, going for the mature lady. And it turns out he knew her in high school. Right. And she was a fresh junior when he was a fresh whatever. Yeah. I don't know which is higher, but older and cooler. And she was in a band, and now she's this old lady, and she comes over to his house to hang out, and they're like dancing to music. And there was like a real sense of menace. I was like, oh God, is he gonna like make a move, and this is gonna be terrible? And it just was played as this like sweet scene. Mm-hmm. But and then you see him afterwards, and he's saying, I think we're just going to be friends. Like, she was married to this guy for 40 years, and she hopes he's going to end up here when he dies.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, when he dies. And so, yeah, I think we're just going to be friends. And they're talking about how Oscar and what's her name? June are the only two people that ended up there as a couple. Mm-hmm. Like, no, that has not happened. And that's not really addressed either.
Yeah.
Paul Weller... or robot with
Peter
Paul,
Weller.
Peter Weller.
Yes, please explain him to me.
I don't know.
So, okay, one of the things I was thinking is maybe this show, like, that's the overarching theme, is, like, your life is determined by these self-imposed limitations that you don't have to impose on yourself, or you don't have to be beholden to, you know, social norms or society's rules. Like, they thought Riverside was the afterlife, but they probably could have gone anywhere, you mm-hmm. know? I thought maybe, even in the afterlife, people are like putting together these rules about what to do and like limiting themselves to being in Oceanside or Riverside. And there are no rules. It's all made up. But then there is this character who is, I think, is called the Traveler, who just pops up a few times.
Yeah.
What does he say?
All roads lead to Oceanside.
Maybe he was just another dead guy who was fucking with people.
Yeah. Yeah, that's like his, he thinks like this is what the afterlife is. You just like have to impart meaning to people or whatever. And he's got a briefcase and they're like, what's in the briefcase?
That's another part that I found so funny.
Yeah.
Because he only says one thing and then stands there silently when they ask what's in the briefcase.
He was great. Yeah, or they're talking about, like, marriage. This isn't, like, an amicable split up at all. They're, like, telling him all this info, and he just stands there impassively with his half-robot, half-cop face. They also... One thing that I did think was interesting that was kind of dropped, so they did find out how they could take energy from the currents, as they call them. But in another episode, they go to the lake house that they had gone to every year, and there's a family living there, obviously, because she sold it after he died.
Yeah.
And Oscar decides to get all mad and like try to haunt them, and Mark is teaching them how to haunt people and like how you can use energy to move stuff.
Yeah.
And June, of course, is so righteously angry and so bottled up that like she can move stuff effortlessly and Oscar can't. But I would have liked sort of more of that, like seeing them interact with like currents more, because it seemed like they could go to the lake house no problem, but they didn't choose to go anywhere else. Like, it,
that's true. It,
like, that would have also, what's your move, Jess, when you're a ghost, if you're trying to like make your presence known, what's your move?
I would if someone was about to eat a sandwich, I would quickly eat the sandwich.
That's so funny. Mine's food related too. I was like, I would like drink all the milk, or just like pour it down the sink and leave like 2 tablespoons of milk in the bottom.
Well, that's too mean.
Yeah, mine's, I was like, yeah, I would fuck with people through food.
Take
definitely.
All those little Andes mints and eat the mint, but then you can like make the packaging look like it's still full of the mint, put them all back in the box. Boom, haunted.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. No flickering candles for me. I'm just going straight for your food, fuckers. That's how I get you.
I'm good at talking this morning. We're going to go to a quick song.
Yes.
And when we come back, we'll talk more about this show and talk about our predictions for season 2 in the afterlife. Stay with us.
Yeah,
we'll be right back.
As always, if you have any thoughts on Forever or this current fucked up timeline we're living in, feel free to tweet at us. We're BFF TV on the radio on Twitter.
Ah, is there a party starting? This is how we do it.
here on the west side. So I reach for my 40 and I turn it up. Designated driver, take the keys to my truck. Hit the shawl cause I'm faded. Honey's in the streets, say money, oh we made it. It feels so good in my hood tonight. The summertime skirts and the guys in Kanai. All the gangbangers forgot about the drive-by. You gotta get your groove on before you go get paid. So tip up your cup and throw your hands up. And let me hear the party say, I'm kinda buzzed and it's all because
this is how we do it.
South Central does it like nobody does.
This is how we do it.
To all my neighbors, you got much flavor.
This is how we do it.
Let's flip the track in the old school bag.
This is how we do it.
This is how we do it. All hands are in the air. And wave on from here to there. If you're an OG Mac or a wannabe player, you see the hood's been good to me ever since I was a lowercase G. But now I'm a big G. The girls see I got the money, $100 bills, y'all. If you were from where I'm from, then you would know that I gotta get mine in a big black truck. You can get yours in a 6-4. Whatever it is, the party's underway. So tip up your cup and throw your hands. Life show was slow, and all they said was 6'8 he stood. And people thought the music that he made was good. They lived the DJ and Paul was his name. He came up to money, this is what he said. You and OG are gonna make some cash. Sell a million records and we're making the dash. Oh, I'm buzzing
because this is how we do it.
South Central dancing like nobody does.
This is how we do it.
To all my neighbors, you got much flavor. I'm whacked on an old school track.
All right, welcome back to TV on the Radio here on BFF.fm.
That this is how we do it,
best
guys.
Song of all time. I do love that song. It's like an unimpeachable
good, it's pretty good,
party
yeah.
song. Yeah, shout out to 1997 or whatever. All right, we will are back to talking forever. Mm-hmm. And... So this has not been ordered for season two, but Alan Yang has
it
talked about it. I know I say this a lot, but I really don't feel like this story needs to keep going.
Yeah.
You know? I can't, again, I'm having a hard time articulating why, but it was such like, it was so philosophically ambitious.
Uh-huh.
I feel like, what are we going to watch in season two? Like the continued hijinks in the afterlife?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. There were no hijinks in the afterlife.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily need any like new. I'm happy that they walked into the ocean together and now like landed somewhere new.
Right. So we see them walk across the ocean floor and they pop out of the ocean and they see something new. Mm-hmm. We don't see what it is. So mm-hmm. where do you think they are? Lakeside?
No, Richard Branson's island. Totally. see Kate Winslet and Ned Rock and Roll when they come out. And,
God, I forgot about Ned Rock and Roll.
And yeah.
My husband thought, and because he thinks more literally when it comes to television and is frequently upset when people like don't articulate their plans or speak in the way people would actually speak. He was like, well, they're probably in Guam. Because yeah, sure, naturally they probably would end up in the South Pacific somewhere.
Yes. In
I kept thinking of like more like water related places because it was Riverside and Oceanside.
Yes.
But I would love the idea that season two is just them like in Guam. Yeah. Navigating cultural differences between themselves and Guamanian formers.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be interesting if there were like different, you're separated by region, like it's where you die. Like what if you're on vacation and you die somewhere and then you end up there?
That'd like, be awesome.
Because they, well, yeah, that'd be great. But what if, I don't know.
What if it was a bad vacation?
Yeah, what if it was not a
what if you
vacation?
Were at the Fresno water slides?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And that's where you end up, which is essentially Riverside,
basically. All right, well, yeah. I like the Guam idea, so get at me, Alan Yang.
Yeah, we have many, many ideas. We could, you know, maybe Richard Branson bought Guam. I mean, sure, we can make all kinds of things happen for season two. Yeah, I agree, though, that it doesn't necessarily need a second season. As we mentioned, it raises like a lot of these philosophical questions that it doesn't necessarily answer. And
it just feels right that it was open-ended.
Yeah. And it also doesn't feel like it's fine that it didn't answer those. Like, I hope that it doesn't start with them arguing about the perfect beach food. Like, or that's what season two is, just going to be them on an island full of bananas and like a beach and bananas, and then they have to test their theory that bananas are the best like beach food, the perfect beach food, not just the best.
This is an aside, but he's planning to leave when they get divorced. Uh-huh. There's an episode concerned with him building this boat that he's going to escape on, and the visual gag of that terrible boat. Yeah. So funny.
Yeah, it was I also really enjoyed the part where she's like, well, here's your ham, I don't know what you're gonna do with that, and he's like, no, I said hammer, and then like the tide had washed out like M-E-R because he left her messages in the sand with everything he needed. Yeah
That was good.
But also one of the things I will say about Oceanside is that you forget everything about your old life. And doesn't that sound amazing? Like, there's this very touching scene with Maya Rudolph and Catherine Keener where she's talking about, like, don't you want the opportunity to have, like, no regrets, to have, like, no limitations, basically. Like, you don't remember all the shit you did that was fucked up. Like, you don't remember feeling bad about this. You don't, like, just letting go. And I think that was part of it, too, is, like, when she and Fred Armisen like let go of each other, then they like voluntarily chose to come back together, blah blah blah. Still, I do not buy it that you would ever willingly return to Fred Armisen if you escaped.
Yeah. So I guess it's like the making a choice between the freedom of having no memory of your life before and no regrets and not being held down by any of that. Or keeping, you know, the life you built with someone, however imperfect it is. Is that why they had to go to a third place? Because they needed something in between those two? Why am I trying to answer the questions
I don't
this show purposefully left unanswered? Okay, I made some notes about, I think it was episode 5.
Yes.
Where she's like, I thought seeing faces in inanimate objects.
Yeah,
like
she definitely was.
Okay.
And that then, was a whole thing.
And I wrote something about how, like, finding meaning in everyday objects is the answer to the existential crisis. But I looked at my notes and I was like, how much did I drink while I was watching this episode? I have no idea what this means.
Yeah, I didn't take it like that. It was more Catherine Keener, after they juiced their first currant, they're both sort of on a high. Yeah. And Catherine Keener is, like, pointing out to her like faces in everyday objects, and then Maya Rudolph starts pointing them out, and Catherine Keener is like, you're really good at this, like you're you're good at noticing these things and like you're good at things on the first try. Like, do you know that about yourself? And it was sort of just, I took it more as like the metaphor for like her awakening, that like somebody told her something about herself that she hadn't realized or recognized. And then she goes back to her boring house with Oscar because she's too scared after seeing Peter Weller. She goes back to her boring house and then sees a face and is like,
right,
I want something new, guys. Even though that little chest of drawers as a face was really adorable.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that guy's super cute. I like that chest of drawers.
That house is amazing.
That house was beautiful. Yeah, it was really beautiful. Disappointed to learn that only one item shows up in your pantry over and over again.
Oh, is that how it works?
I don't think so, because like he made mac and cheese and all this other food.
Maybe there's a grocery store.
But they talked about how like
Postmates
things just show up in your like the
God, that sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Not going and grocery shopping, but also not contributing to the sharing economy.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds great. Sounds really great. Just opening your cupboard and having like more of your favorite thing.
What was the thing about not being able to burn the furniture? Is that about how you can't change like your environment? You can only change how you act in it?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, sure. Let's say that's what it is. It's about you can't change your environment. You can only change how you react. Or it's again, like you're literally trapped by something that is like you exert no, like everything's meaningless. Like you exert no change on anything.
Is this show Buddhist?
Yeah. It's like you exert.
Your possessions trap you. Your desire for things is what. I forget everything I ever learned about
Buddhism.
When I read the Tao of Pooh or whatever.
Everything you need is contained within. And
yeah.
Burning your furniture will set you free, but it won't because your furniture just shows up again. I don't know. It was also kind of like meaningless. Like there's nothing you do affects any change. So mm-hmm. Yeah, you can't change your environment. You can only change yourself, I guess. Change comes from within.
What snack food would appear magically in your house in the afterlife?
I've started off being like, oh, it's got to be burritos, right? But then I was like, well, I'd like a nacho occasionally. Like, I don't know. I can't really limit myself to one thing. So I just chose banana pudding because I feel like I can always go for some banana pudding, you know? That sounds good.
I'm going to go with a chocolate shake.
Ooh, also a good choice.
But yeah, even thinking about that, it's like having one thing for eternity, that would be hell, even if it's the best thing. Like burritos. I used to get this burrito from the same place when I worked in West Berkeley, and it was delicious. A+ burrito. After working in that neighborhood for 12 years, I would rather kill myself than eat that same burrito again. Yeah. Disgusting.
Yeah.
That's imagine eternity.
Yeah,
that was close enough. What is the best way to sit?
Look, I'll just say it. There's really never any good way to sit. I'm never fully comfortable when I'm sitting.
Right?
Never.
You always have to shift positions.
Yeah, again, can't be limited to one good way to sit because there's just not. The best way to sit is to lie down. Reclining is the only good way to sit, exactly. Guys.
Feet up.
Yeah.
On the desk. You know, this show, the more I think about it, the more interesting it is. Just the idea that their banter is always about like, what's the one best way to do something? Mm-hmm. What's the correct answer? There is no correct answer.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. Also, it's who wants to eat a banana at the beach? What is the best beach food? There is one answer to this.
What is the best beach
white
food?
Wine.
Oh, true.
Sand sinks right to the bottom of the bottle.
That's right.
No problem.
That's right. I was going to go with hot dogs, but I don't know. I will say, though,
that's a lot of work, though.
There's.
What are you going to do, bring a grill with you?
Yeah, I don't know. I will say that there is so much that's, like, relatable about their conversations. When he said, like, churros, I was like, a churro looks like sand. And then Maya Rudolph was like, you're going to give me something that looks exactly like sand. And I was like, I knew it. Like, this is universal. There are some things we can agree on, even in the afterlife.
when he said something about, I think he was building his boat or something, and he said something about an idea being flushed out.
Yes.
And then she's like, okay, well, I'll see you. And she walks away. And then I was like, it's supposed to be fleshed out. And then she comes back and she's like, by the way,
it's fleshed out.
I was like, yes!
And then you know what's totally unrealistic is he's like, oh, you're right. Like, he tested it out a few times and then said, you're right, you're right. I can see fleshed out. No man in the history of the world or the afterlife has ever told a woman she's right about anything ever.
Yeah, that was beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful little fantasy there.
Maybe that's why she decided to stay with him.
Yeah, maybe.
She's he grew. He's teachable.
Yeah. Sweet. All right, well, anything else about this show?
Fred Armisen's garbage. Don't give him any more work, people. I just fucking hate that guy.
I did think that he was a little bit the weak link in this show. Because, I mean, I thought it was fine that he was very rigid and didn't give a lot. But the show, I think, was supposed to be about their emotional journey a little bit. Mm-hmm. And he didn't change at all. I thought he was funny, but he didn't bring the acting chops that Maya Rudolph brought to this pairing.
Yeah, he doesn't have any emotions. I truly think Fred Armisen is just a straight up ego. Like, and he's just, I strongly dislike that guy. I can also see why he was cast, because that's his entire oeuvre. I don't know.
It sounded the same to me.
I don't know. Somebody will have to tell me in the afterlife. By the way, it's egg, bitch. It's not oof. But
no one wanted to tell
you. I also totally see why, because he has made that career on like being that faux earnest asshole.
Yeah.
And I think Fred Armisen probably does go through his life thinking like, I'm nice, that's enough. And he doesn't perform any nice things. He just like tells himself that he's nice.
Mm-hmm.
I hate Fred Armisen, guys.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
I get a very bad vibe from him. Like, I get think kind he's of a bad very vibe. Bad. Yeah. Personally, he's probably a real dirtbag.
Interesting.
I don't know. I have no...
You allegedly anything. Get a bad vibe.
I have nothing to back this up other than my gut intuition, which ever since Chris Hardwick was outed as a fucking douchebag, Jess and I have both made a pact to just trust our gut with things
that. Yeah, no. I've been giving some thought about people who I get bad vibes from, and I think I'm probably right.
Yeah.
I'm not going to slander anyone on the radio today, but...
Yeah.
So would you watch season two? Could you endure more Fred Armisen for this show?
Yeah, I mean, as much as I don't like Fred Armisen, I thought that the show was very interesting. Again, as I said, I'm always interested to see a show just do something different.
Mm-hmm.
And this show definitely captured that. And I have equal love in my heart for the amount of hate I have for Fred Armisen. I have equal love for Maya Rudolph.
Yeah.
I think she is great. She's hilarious. You should all watch her as the female hormone monster in Big Mouth.
Yes, we were talking about this during the song break when we were rocking out.
I forgot that
season two of Big Mouth is out now. I'm excited to watch
it. I think that is the true expression of Maya Rudolph. Like, she's got that raspy, like, don't give a fuck vibe. Mm-hmm. And, like, she's got big, beautiful hair. And, like, it's great. I love Maya Rudolph. And I think that she should be the hormone monster forever. That's how I will always remember her. But I did think she was amazing in the show. And yeah, really conveyed so much with like very little sort of.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't the typical flamboyant over the top like hormone monster shooting up the sunglasses rack in a CVS vibe
that I so enjoy
from Maya Rudolph.
I'm glad you came around to Big Mouth. You were lukewarm on the first
season. I'm still not totally sold, but I'm also just like yesterday was a fucking another shitty day. And I was like, you know what? Yeah, I just want to let me see some gross out fucking humor with occasional laugh out loud moments.
Yeah.
I'm good with that. And also, I think that in general, like I'm giving a lot more credence to people who I think are good people. And I think Nick Kroll and John Mulaney and Jason Mantzoukas and that whole crew sort of fit that mold.
Yeah. I hate to say good vibes, but
I guess just all the vibes.
In that they're not bad vibes.
Yeah. There's a lot about consent in season two of Big Mouth, which is nice. This is a total aside, but I mentioned earlier that one of the things that is truly loathsome about Fred Armisen's character is his lack of curiosity. And I think that that is, I don't know, occasionally a hallmark for like the death of a marriage. Mm-hmm. Like you always hear people say like, oh, like they just stopped making an effort or they stopped like striving for something new or whatever.
Yeah.
And I was listening this week to, we've been watching a lot of The Good Place in my house.
Oh, uh-huh.
And I decided to give a listen to the Dax Shepard podcast, Armchair Expert. And I specifically listened to the episode featuring he and his lovely wife, Kristen Bell.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't say it's worth a listen, but... But the thing I was really struck by is Dax Shepard, like, they're widely sort of held up as, like, this example of a good Hollywood couple, right? Mm-hmm. Like, people generally like both of them. I think Kristen Bell is, like, otherworldly charming. She's very...
She seems like a real capital G good person.
Yeah, she really does. And the thing I was super struck by is, like, their conversation, they were giving each other shit and, like, talking about how he's kind of a shithead and... But, like, she's so respectful, and it's that, like, that hallmark of, like, you can tell these people truly, like, respect each other, but she kept harping back on how Dax Shepard is, like, a curious, introspective person, and how, like, that's so attractive to her, and mm-hmm. I was like, God damn, like, Kristen Bell, I needed Kristen Bell to articulate, like, what's attractive, yeah. Like, is that, yeah, that's super attractive to have somebody who, like, he plays as such a fucking, like, just a regular bro, but then, like, he does seem slightly, like, I'm sure he can be a douche and a total shithead, but he also seems like he maybe thinks about it later and, right. Like, has some, you
imagine
know, like,
someone
reflects
making
on
an
it.
Effort to be a good person.
Yeah, and he just, like, listens to her and what? Takes her, like, I don't know, I was very touched by, like, their dynamic, and I was like, I should strive to listen to my husband more, and then I came home and I was like, why are you so annoying? Stop talking. So, I don't know, if I end up a better person, I think partially down to Kristen Bell.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll have to finally talk about The Good Place.
Yeah.
I'm catching up. I might actually catch up to real time this season.
Yeah, we're powering through season two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where
You mentioned that The Good Place and Forever and Master mm-hmm. of None and these kind of uncynical shows are, we're going to be able to point back to that as like, man, we were really going through something, huh?
Yeah.
And yeah, that's true.
Yeah. That's assuming that there is actual introspection in the future.
Or that there's a future.
Yeah. Future's sure. Just going to be a tire fire and an Instagram museum.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Leah, thanks for talking with me today. You're a good person.
Thank you. You're a good person too, Jess. Thanks. I also want to say that one of the main takeaways for me midway through is I'm like, female friendships are the only sustaining thing in any woman's life, basically. Yeah, her relationship with Catherine Keener was the thing that, like, made her seek more in the afterlife. Yeah. And her hilarious relationship with the
mom her neighbor
from...
I didn't recognize that actor.
Yeah, I can't remember the actor's name, but...
She was funny.
She was very funny. And also, I would like some gas station, like, cups of wine that have, like, that are sealed over like the top. Yeah, I was like, let's make this happen. That's my one refillable item in the afterlife.
Oh, yeah. Because
it wouldn't, because it's perfect, because it's single serving. And also, it's got to be kind of shitty wine, right? So that's about right. That's about right for the afterlife.
All right, well, thank you guys so much for listening. Come back next week. We will talk about more stuff in a very articulate and thought-provoking way.
It's mainly probably really just going to be me still decompressing after watching A Star Is Born, to be honest.
That's fine. All right, have a good Sunday, you guys. Stay tuned for Indie Rock Girl Radio.